This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I think Will knows most of
I know.
Us
I know. This whole crew is the same.
Aren't you like sick
familiar
of,
faces?
Does it ever get weird when you see the same people again and
wait,
again?
Who's landofthelost.com?
Or
George.
staring down at me. making sure that we haven't fucked anything up.
It's too late.
Oh, already. Gosh. George has already got it out for us. Well, what can you do?
So you've been attached to this for about 3 years?
I don't know how long. I was attached initially, and then I wasn't going to be able to do it, and Universal really wanted to make it, and so they were going to make it with other people, and then that disappeared. So it's kind of... I forget the chronology of it all, but...
Do you think your character in Jay and Silent Bob was some sort of cosmic foreshadowing of this?
It must have been, yeah. In fact, we owe a great deal of credit to Kevin Smith for the fact that we are all sitting in this lovely air-conditioned tent right now.
Well, Sid and Marty...
With Japanese lanterns.
Sid and Marty didn't even know that you played a character named...
Well, that doesn't surprise me. but I'm sure Marty would say, if he could see that movie, he'd be like, "Yep, I knew it. It's a sign."
Well, you're rocking the khaki.
Yeah, the khaki's good. I like it. I'm trying to think. Not since Elf have I been able to just wear the same clothes every single day. So, which is nice. You don't have to think about things. You don't have those awkward wardrobe moments where you tried on a different T-shirt that you thought was really cool, and then it's not the same one the next day, and you're like, "What happened? Oh, the director didn't like it." So, this is good. It never changes. I like it.
So, how hard is it? You have this big movie, big effect. You have to be hitting marks, staring up at invisible dinosaurs. How hard is it to do all that and then also be really funny and be loose and be Will Ferrell?
Well, it's different. Yeah, it's a whole different animal in a way. In some ways, you actually don't have to be funny all the time, which is what I like about it. And in a lot of ways, you can play these adventure moments just completely straight, and they come off funny. So you don't have to work at it too much. And the flip side of it is, as we're in precarious situations, it's like such a great backdrop to actually throw out these lines that are commenting on the fact that you're about to be eaten. That's why I love Rick Marshall, who's like he's like obviously scared for his life. At the same time, his scientific mind is always working, and he's like has a great appreciation of this creature that's about to eat him all at the same time. So it's a great combination for a comedy.
For the people who don't know actually about the film, can you talk just a little bit about who your character is in it?
I am slightly different from the TV show, except George might be able to shed some light on this. Was Rick Marshall, was it ever established? Was he just a guy who liked to explore with his children?
He was a park ranger.
Okay. So that's where this is different. Rick Marshall in the movie is a quantum paleontologist. So, slightly failed. He used to, you know, there was a moment in time that we kind of see at the beginning of the movie where he was one of the stars of the scientific community, but then he wrote this book on how he thought there were holes in time and space, and everyone thought he was crazy, and he ended up potentially punching Matt Lauer. We haven't shot it yet. And that led to his fall from grace, and we kind of pick him up working at the La Brea Tar Pits, trying to teach children who aren't listening to him and all this stuff like that. So it's slightly different in that he had developed these theories about places like Land of the Lost, and it wasn't until Holly showed up and who had studied some of his findings and kind of reinvigorated him to get back in the field, and that led them on this adventure.
Did you watch the show? Were you a fan?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I loved... my brother and I would loved Land of the Lost. It was kind of, you know... For those of us who watched it, it was like such a unique thing on Saturday mornings that it didn't... I just loved that it wasn't a silly cartoon, that it was actually... seemed so real at the time, you know, and how did they make the show with dinosaurs and these sleestak creatures, and how they think of it, and it looks so real. And I wish I was Will. And, you know, it was like, I always thought it was the coolest premise, you know, and the fact that it didn't talk down to kids. It seemed like a real adventure show, so I loved it.
Whose idea was it to work in the original theme song into the movie?
I don't know. I think it was just a given that we kind of had to reference that, obviously, and I think it was just Brad Silberling working with the writers Chris and Dennis, you know, just trying to think of a moment where we could kind of incorporate that, and so we found a pretty funny moment to do that.
Were you responsible for any Sleestak references on SNL?
Were there?
The writer told us about one where a background character was talking about making Sleestak porn in a sketch. He said you guys and Adam McKay would always try to work it.
I'm trying to think. I'm sure we did. Yeah, I don't have any specific.
Okay.
The cheerleaders sketch was based on Sleestaks, though. The camaraderie that the Sleestaks have with each other was a manifestation of that. So
now it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, right. Now you finally get it. Yeah. Now it's finally funny.
We heard a lot about the Sleestak sex scene. So can you tell us a little more about that? And would you do one?
Would I do one? No, God, no. Because they shed their skin in the process. I don't know if you know that. Did you know that, George?
No.
Yeah, yeah. We got you on that one. Holly has been abducted, and we're trying to find her, and we're in this crystal cave, and we come across two Sleestaks that we think are, you know, on watch, and so we have to kind of hide, and then it turns out that they start to make out, and of course, being the scientist, I'm like, no, they're just exchange of masticated nutrients, and Will keeps saying, no, they're making out, they're about to do it, and I'm like, what are you talking about, shut up, and then, of course, yeah, it happens, but you only see so much. It's PG-13, we can't.
So you've known Danny, and you... presented Foot Fist Way to America.
Right, right.
But this is your first time working with him.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What's that dynamic like between the two of you?
That's really fun. I mean, it was, become kind of good friends, you know, through this process. And I'd love to keep trying to work with him. I might do a couple little cameo parts in the series we're producing. But he's so much fun. He's like, He kind of likes to work the same way I do, and that just, you know, work hard, but you know, have fun while you're making a movie, because why shouldn't you? And he's just really kind of open, great improviser, and really open with comedy. And yeah, we've been lucky that the three of us, Anna and Danny and I, and Yorma too, who plays Chaka, like. For four people who've had to spend a lot of time together, we've had just a great time.
It's funny because people keep hearing Danny's name, and they probably haven't seen him in much of anything.
I know, yeah, yeah.
So sort of what, can you sort of explain what the Danny McBride appeal is, sort of, to people who don't know?
Well, I mean, if you spend any, you know, on a personal level, if you spend any time, he's just really kind of fun, gregarious personality, very... someone you kind of everyone wants to be around, and then you know, as in terms of a performer, he's kind of got that thing that he shows off in Foot Fist Way, which is this, you know, attitude of someone who really doesn't know that he's you know, maybe this kind of slovenly guy who's, you know, that thing that kind of unabashed, like, undeserved self-confidence that's really funny to watch someone play with, and that's kind of sums up a lot of the things that he does in a way.
We've heard some rumors about maybe an Anchorman 2. Is Ron Burgundy a character you'd like to revisit?
I know, I heard Mr. Adam McKay already told the world. And definite interest. I mean, I think we now have to do it, which is good. kind of forced him into a corner.
Would you pick him up back in the 70s? Or would you like?
Have no idea. Yeah, we just we've talked about a couple little premises, but I think Adam plans on directing another film that he wrote, actually with Dennis McNicholas, in the fall, and so it'd probably be at least another year or so before we'd even start writing some or thinking some.
Adam said that the project, if they were to do Anchorman, would be like 2 years.
Probably.
And after the story came out, all the people started getting contact.
Yeah, yeah.
The movie, and everyone's like, "Yeah, just call me up.
I know,
want to do it."
Which is great to hear. Yeah.
So I guess, I looked online. It seems like many people really love the character. So I guess, so this is definitely something that you'd be willing to go back to.
I would definitely be willing to go back to it. You know, whether or not it happens, you know, it still remains to be seen. I think for myself and Steve, well, all of us were all at different places than we were when we first filmed it. So, you know, we'd have to figure all that out. But this is, you know, this is something that, I mean, we've never really been huge on the sequel thing in a way, and yet I was kind of always prodding Adam that if we were to do a sequel on anything, Anchorman would be the one to do it on. It seemed like it'd be so much fun, and so I think Adam kind of came around on that a little bit, and I think it was, you know, because I started doing Ron Burgundy on the Funny or Die comedy tour, and that kind of got everyone fired up again. So, yeah, so hopefully we can actually get this going.
Could you guys top great comedy sequels like Caddyshack 2 or Blues Brothers 2000?
Blues Brothers 2000, no. And we know the extent of our limitations, to be honest. And but I think we could come close, like a Blues Brothers 1000.
How is it with you for picking future projects? How does because obviously you've done a lot of stuff, and you can probably pick a project. What's your channels on how projects come to you, and how do you pick things?
It's the usual channels of agent and manager type of, in terms of procuring scripts and that sort of thing. At the same time, you know, working with a guy like Jimmy Miller, we kind of have a lot of relationships with other writers, and we kind of have enough people in place to where if we have ideas, we can kind of get them into development and get them going. So it's kind of I'm in kind of this, like, it's like a 50-50 split of things that we're developing just on our own, so we don't have to worry about waiting for a script to come along, and then the usual thing of, like, the script just came in, everyone's talking about it, do you want to read it, that sort of thing.
Now that HBO's bought a stake in your website, you're putting your die, is it going to change it all, or?
The actual website?
Yeah.
No, they won't have any kind of creative influence, I don't think. I hope not, I guess. I don't know. Watch, they'll take over it now. We'll all be fired, and Haas will take over. I think that's why they kind of wanted to buy in, because they really like the model that we're doing and everything that's set up. I mean, we would obviously entertain any input they might have, but at the end of the day, we're still kind of just in charge of the content and the style and everything like that.
Is there going to be like co-productions specifically Funny or Die and HBO coming?
There could. It's kind of all, it's brand new territory in a way. You know, I don't know exactly how far or where this path's going to go. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see we'll see how these 10 half hours go and what that turns out to be like and go from there.
Last question.
Just another Funny or Die question.
Yeah.
How involved are you creative? Like, you're working on a movie like this where it's, you know, statistics or whatever.
Yeah.
Is it something where you just, you know, check in every once in a while and then once you're in between projects?
Yeah. It's pretty hard. I mean, if I'm kind of doing this thing, I'm kind of out of the picture a little bit. And then once I wrap and have a little bit of breathing room, then I'm able to kind of check back in and that sort of thing. I mean, we're always kind of in... you know, we're always talking to each other about what the site's looking to do and updates on, you know, the numbers, and which half of which I don't understand. But I kind of come in and out as my schedule kind of allows me to.
Do you see Funny or Die as possibly one day being a springboard for movie projects? I mean, like characters that you create there?
Yeah, it could. I mean, it could in a certain scenario, you know, be a place where a movie is released. If potentially, you know, we'll have to see just how far the internet's gonna go. You know, is film gonna totally go to that medium, or is it gonna be a mix? Or I think it's one of those things that. Yeah, it's very it's conflicting, because that would be a neat thing to have happen. At the same time, I still love going to the movies. So
I was just one last thing. I was just curious, how many times you've been to Comic-Con, and are you going this summer?
I've never been. Yeah, I've never been. I don't think I've ever been invited. and I know we have an invite, but I'll be for this movie. But I'll be out of the country.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, what are you doing after this?
I'll be promoting Step Brothers for all of July, pretty much, and then I'll go to Sweden for a month to the Swedish Comic Con. It blows this Comic Con away.
You gonna do a sequel to the landlord video?
Well, we've already done a couple. Pearl's retired. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.